Court is back in session.
Good afternoon, everybody. Please be seated. Our final case today is case number 55752, State versus Reliant Energy. If you notice, Justice Perigary is not on this case. He is recused. And also, Chief Justice Seda is out of the jurisdiction on court business. Now, what she'll do is she'll listen to the tapes of this and then conference with us on this case. So, six-member court on this particular case. For the appellant, Mr. Kelly.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is James Tynan Kelly, and I'm a lawyer based in Houston, Texas. And I want to thank the court for having the opportunity to appear here today. My co-counsel and client, Eric Witkowski, is the head of the Bureau of Consumer Protection of the Attorney General's Office. Now, we have, the court synopsis says three issues, and it's correct: federal preemption, personal jurisdiction of the state of Nevada over defendant Mary Kathleen Zanaboni, and then this issue of the appealability of the case. I'm going to focus mainly on preemption. Well, by the way, I'd like to reserve approximately 7 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay.
What is the market in this case? This is a factual point, but it's important for the whole case. I'll refer the court to the appellate record at page 693, where Reliant CFO drew a map of its operations through the United States, and it created a, call it a tri-state area, what I'll call Cal Nevada Zona. You have California, and then bulging out from Southern California, Southern Nevada, and Arizona. And this market was, we use the term TOPOC market, but the pricing at a pipeline junction called TOPOC set an index price, which was part of the contracts for most gas sales throughout the Southwest and the whole tri-state area. So it's easy to focus on that one location, but we're talking about this whole tri-state area. Now, we're here on a motion, this court's review of a motion to dismiss. That means, and the trial court found that federal preemption of what it called the wholesale gas market, that federal regulation controlled that market, and the Nevada Unfair Trade Practices Act had no application there. I believe that's the wrong decision. Because case law has shown that we've cited means that it is not at all crystal clear that all of the commodity transactions, and indeed any of the commodity transactions in TOPOC or anywhere else in the modern natural gas market, was in fact regulated by the FERC. In fact, Congress deleted the FERC's rate-making power for the vast majority of commodity transactions, and that is what compels, I think, the reversal and remand of this case. I want to focus on a case we cited by the FERC itself called National Association of Gas Consumers versus All Sellers of Natural Gas, cited in our brief. And in that case, at the time of the energy crisis, which is when all this took place, the a coalition of gas consumers came in and said to FERC, FERC, impose price controls. We need them. And FERC's answer was to dismiss the complaint, saying, we don't have the jurisdiction to do that. Our jurisdiction was limited by Congress, and we cannot grant the relief that you're saying. They didn't say you didn't plead it right. They didn't say you didn't have enough evidence. They said, we can't do it. The second case I want to focus on is the Gallo Wine case against Encana Services. That's a Ninth Circuit case. The Ninth Circuit has a whole bunch of electricity cases where they dismissed antitrust cases and other consumer cases. But then when they took those electricity cases and tried to apply them to the natural gas context, the Ninth Circuit said, wait a minute, we can't get there because of the deregulation of the commodity markets by Congress. So those two cases, I submit, on a motion to dismiss, established that the dismissal was an error, and this court has to remand the case to the district court. Now, what does Reliant have to oppose this. They have a FERC opinion that they cite called In Re Reliant Energy Services, which is a settlement between Reliant and an office within the FERC staff. And this, if you go through their brief, on numerous issues, this supposedly establishes the jurisdiction of the FERC over Reliant and over the price-fixing conduct that's the subject of this case. But the Reliant case, just read it, no money was paid on it, and the FERC itself said that this is not precedent in any way, shape, or form for us. So if it's not precedent for them, it shouldn't be precedent for this court. And by the way, Reliant paid $25 million and included in their settlement agreement a requirement that the FERC make specific findings about this TOPOP conduct. And if those findings were not included in the order, it was null and void. Now, I think when the FERC in a litigated case says it doesn't have the jurisdiction, and then in a settlement says it does, I think the court has to go with the litigated case that's an enforceable precedent within the FERC itself. Now, this court in Nana Pierce evaluated field preemption, which is the sort of key argument of the respondents. Well, in that case, the court said you have to do a careful look at the actual statutory scheme. Now, the reason why in NAGC, as I call it, the FERC said it didn't have the jurisdiction is because the Natural Gas Act, which was passed in 1938, had been severely limited by two subsequent enactments, the Natural Gas Policy Act and the Wellhead Decontrol Act. The Natural Gas Policy Act deprived FERC of rate jurisdiction over what are called first sales of natural gas, but it left intact a schedule of statutory price controls. But then in 89, Congress took that away too and said, it's all deregulated. There's only a tiny sliver of jurisdiction left, and I'm sure you'll hear about that from Reliant. We established in our brief, and I won't go into it too much, but we have a case, State of Illinois versus Panhandle Eastern Pipeline from the 80s, in which a state attorney general proceeding in parens patriae, just like here, sued a natural gas pipeline company, and the dispositive ruling was on the state antitrust law, and the court said that there was no preemption in that case. And that's when there was a lot more regulation than there is now. So we've got a template, we've got a case. It's well established that there is no, the FERC has no antitrust jurisdiction. There's no conflict between the FERC having the power to decide an antitrust issue and any antitrust issue in the state. So there's no conflict there. Now, I want to go briefly, given my time, into the personal jurisdiction issue. As I said, that the market here is the tri-state area. And the basic argument from the other side is that, well, Ms. Zanaboni lives in Los Angeles, and she was working in California, and Nevada doesn't have any relationship to it. But Ms. Zanaboni was the price fixer. She engaged in a price-fixing arrangement with Enron. And her relation to Nevada is simply that she intended to affect the market. Southern Nevada is part of the market. So there was an intent and a conspiracy. Now, we've cited the conspiracy theory of jurisdiction, which was recognized by the Nevada Supreme Court in the Davis case, which was a case coming out of the Hughes estate matter, a fairly terse case. We've added to it Kansas Supreme Court case of Merriman. And basically, Reliant itself registered 16 subsidiaries in Nevada. It built a power plant in Nevada. It sold gas in Nevada. It sold electricity in Nevada. Reliant established itself in Nevada to a degree where we made a very good record of general jurisdiction in this court. And that is an unappealed denial of their motion for lack of personal jurisdiction. that I think is binding on the court here. The co-conspirator contacts with Nevada are attributed to Ms. Zanaboni, and on that basis, that part of the case has to be vacated and remanded. The final point on this appealability point, we filed a Rule 59e motion. We called it a 59e motion. It told limitations, or told, the final judgment rule. There was an effort to recharacterize that as a motion for reconsideration. But in the meantime, the court came out with its Primo case, which said, we're not doing those reconsideration things anymore. And I think the AA Primo case basically blows that theory out of the water, and it is a properly appealed case. And this court does have jurisdiction, so I'll reserve my time.
You have about 5 minutes and 13 seconds left. Mr. Tomlinson. And also with Mr. Tomlinson are Mr. Greg Copeland and Mr. Orrin Harrison.
Yes, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Neil Tomlinson. I'm appearing today on behalf of respondents Reliant Energy, Inc., Reliant Resources, Inc., and also Kathleen Zanaboni. As you said, with me is Mr. Greg Copeland and also Mr. Orrin Harrison, who's representing CenterPoint Energy. Mr. Copeland will address the federal preemption and the UTPA issues. I will address the personal jurisdiction issue as to Ms. Zanaboni and also the AA Primo Builders issue.
Well, what about Primo? Does Primo settle this issue for us as far as tolling the statute?
I don't believe so. I concede that under the Primo holding and the test that their motion would satisfy the new test. But this was back in 2007 when the court made a decision, and the controlling cases at that time were the Whitehead and Albus case. And if you were to apply this recent ruling to the time 2007, the time their motion, you'd be retroactively applying that and retroactively conferring jurisdiction when none existed at that time. So that's the issue with AA Primos. I do concede that their motion would satisfy the new test, but it'd be retroactive.
May it please the court, I'm Greg Copeland. I think the first thing I would say to the court is that to cut through this case and make it really simple, the thing I would ask that you do is focus on the very narrow set of facts that are alleged by the state in this case. They don't deal with the whole array of issues that you see in all the other cases out of the Ninth Circuit and out of Judge Pro's court. They are focused solely on the trading by Ms. Zanaboni with Enron for gas deliveries at the California-Arizona border. And why is that important? I think it's important because this is a UTPA case, and the UTPA clearly says that every activity enumerated in this subsection constitutes a contract, combination, or conspiracy in restraint of trade, and it is unlawful to conduct any part of such activity in this state. Ms. Zanaboni lived and worked in Los Angeles. Her job was to buy gas to run the Reliant power plants in California. And she also bought gas for the Los Angeles Department of Power plants under a contract. Enron was in Houston. And the gas, of course, was delivered through the El Paso gas pipeline, which ran through Arizona and terminated at the California border. So all the gas went to California, and that's where it stayed. So that's point one under the statute. Point two under the statute is that 598A.040 says the provisions of this chapter shall not apply to conduct which is expressly authorized, regulated, or approved by an administrative agency of this state or of the United States. We have a order by an agency of the United States. It's the 2003 order by FERC. FERC investigated the very allegations that are in this case, Ms. Zanaboni's trading of gas at Topoc. Why was it an issue there? This was during the crisis, and they were having to run all those power plants over there, and she was buying a ton of gas and traded the lot with Enron, who was one of the biggest sellers into that market. So FERC took a look at that. What did FERC find? FERC found the commission has jurisdiction over Reliance trades at Topoc and has exercised that jurisdiction in reviewing such trades. Reliance trading at Topoc on Enron Online constituted trading in the wholesale gas market and was undertaken pursuant to a blanket marketing certificate issued by the commission. It finds that Reliance activity at Topoc did not violate the Natural Gas Act or the commission's regulations. And in a separate paragraph, they find, with respect to Reliance trading activity at Topoc, no remedy is appropriate. Now, Judge Proe, in his decision in July in 2011 in the Western States Wholesale Natural Gas litigation, he got the point of that. He quotes from the FERC order. Specifically, FERC concluded it had jurisdiction over Reliance trades at Topoc and has exercised that jurisdiction in reviewing such trades. Counsel for the state would argue, well, just disregard the order because it's a settlement. Here's what Judge Proe says. FERC's actual exercise of jurisdiction over RES during the relevant time period for the same conduct at issue in this case is evidence that RES was a jurisdictional seller. So it doesn't matter that the order was the result of a settlement. It's the fact that FERC exercised the jurisdiction and recognized that it had jurisdiction over Reliant that matters. In response to our brief filing Judge Proe's decision as a supplemental authority, the state has attacked Judge Proe's findings and has made a very significant misstatement, which was again repeated today. At page 7 of the brief, it says, significantly, the FERC has ruled that its wholesale sales jurisdiction is insufficient to impose rate controls over natural gas. And then it attaches the two orders out of the proceeding that counsel mentioned earlier. Those orders don't say anything like that. What that dealt with was a request for emergency relief to reimpose price controls on the transportation of gas into California, and the FERC said that's moot, the crisis is over, and we have reimposed those conditions. There then was a request to FERC, well, please put on controls on the wellhead price of gas. FERC said we can't do that because of the Wellhead Decontrol Act. That's the so-called first sales problem. We don't have a first sales problem here. There's nothing in this case that's a first sales problem. And what the FERC says in their order, their second order that's attached to their pleading, is this. The Commission's jurisdiction under the NGA includes all sales for resale by interstate and intrastate pipelines and LDCs and their affiliates other than their own sale of their own production. So clearly the FERC did not say what they've represented. So those arguments, I would say to the court, would be reason enough to dismiss this case simply under the UTPA. If the UTPA didn't exist, I would argue that the claims that are being asserted are barred by the doctrines of preemption. Everybody talks about them in the order of field preemption, conflict preemption, and filed rate doctrine. I'm going to flip that order because I would submit to you, given the FERC order in this case, saying that no remedy is appropriate for what Ms. Zanaboni was doing in California, presents a classic conflict issue, right? Because if a Nevada court tried to issue some kind of relief penalizing Reliant for Ms. Zanaboni's trading, that would conflict directly with the FERC's order. I would also say that that is a clear case of a violation of the filed rate doctrine. And that for that, I would point the court to the Ninth Circuit decision in Gray Harbor, and I want to read some of the language out of that case. Gray's Harbor argues that no actual conflict exists in this case that would require a finding of conflict preemption. But by asking the court to set a fair price Grace Harbor is invoking a state rule that would interfere with the method by which the federal statute was designed to reach its goals. To permit Grace Harbor to receive in this court action what is essentially a refund would create a conflict with FERC's authority over wholesale rates. So in that case, Grace Harbor basically collapsed the concept of filed rate doctrine and conflict preemption into one when you're dealing with a rate question. You get to the same result. And I'm sorry to rush through this, but there are several things that I think are worth to the court. They place all of their argument on the Gallo case. Gallo is terrible for them. I would just encourage the court to read that case. Here's some language out of Gallo. Because the FPA and NGA are substantially identical, and there's an established practice of citing interchangeably decisions interpreting the provisions, the pertinent sections of the two statutes, the filed rate doctrine and analysis in Grace Harbor is also applicable to market-based rates under the NGA. And remember that language out of the FERC order about the market-based rates and the certificate. First, federal preemption of state damage claims applies to the natural gas arena as well as to the electricity arena. A challenge to market-based rate, natural gas rates established pursuant to FERC's blanket market certificate would require a court to reconsider natural gas rates that FERC has already determined to be reasonable. Permitting a state court to grant a refund would create a problem under Grace Harbor. Last point, the filed rate doctrine bars federal antitrust claims in the natural gas arena just as it does in the electricity arena. So that disposes of the idea that antitrust claims are somehow immune. There's a hole in this concept of preemption and filed rate for first sales. That's in Gallo. That's not in this case. We don't have first sales. There was also the court recognized difficulty in dealing with the filed rate doctrine when you have a false report that was submitted to the pricing publications. Again, we don't have that question in this case. That's not the claim here. Tennessee Supreme Court in the Leggett case dealt with those issues in a very well-written opinion, which I think handles all the arguments that have been made here quite well, and Judge Proe did as well. He said, well, despite that hole that's left in Gallo, when I look at this under preemption, because the FERC has taken action in these areas, there is complete preemption even over the price manipulation from false reporting. Thank you, and I give Mr. Tomlinson the rest of the time here.
Mr. Tomlinson, you have 3 minutes and 33 seconds. 333.
Fantastic. May it please the court and counsel. With regard to Ms. Zanaboni and the personal jurisdiction issue, the appellants agree that they have only pled specific personal jurisdiction against Ms. Zanaboni. So that's what we're talking about here. And specific personal jurisdiction requires purposeful availment. She has to purposely avail herself of the Nevada forum. That comes to us from the Trump and Emeterio cases. They also agree that they have the burden in this case of introducing competent evidence of essential facts which establish a prima facie showing that personal jurisdiction exists.
Isn't conspiracy enough, though, if you allege conspiracy, at least to get you past a motion to dismiss? Or?
No, it's not. And there's two reasons why it's not. First is, Ms. Zanaboni's employer is not a party to this suit. It's undisputed that she worked for Reliant Energy Services, Inc. They knew from day one that was the name of her employer because it's all over the FERC order and the FERC staff report. That's who she worked for. They're not a party to this suit. The second reason is the conspiracy cases that they cite, if you look at any one of those cases, they all still have some purposeful availment of the forum. Okay, in the Merriman case, which was a Kansas case, talking about Kansas statutes, in that case, the companies actually sold tire manufacturing product in the state, and there were other connections to the state as well. In this case, Ms. Zanaboni, we're just talking about Ms. Zanaboni here. We're not talking about her employer, because her employer, Reliant Energy Services, Inc., is not a party to this lawsuit, and the court below did not rule on jurisdiction as to the other two respondents, the other two Reliant respondents. So what we have here is we've got Ms. Zanaboni trading from California with someone in Texas for the delivery of gas in Topak, Arizona, which is for use in Southern California gas market. They as much as say and agree to that in their complaint at page 3, paragraph 4, where they talk about the gas that was shipped that comes into Topak, that was to come for the interstate pipelines of Southern California Gas Company and Pacific Gas and Electric Company. That's what that gas was for. There is absolutely no place in this record anywhere. You can look high and low in the complaint, in the briefs, in every part of this record, and there is not one citation to anything that has a connection of Ms. Zanaboni to the state of Nevada. The conspiracy thing fails. It fails for those two reasons.
Counsel, are you familiar at all with the Kansas case or the Merriman case in Kansas?
I am.
How would you distinguish this case from that case?
I would distinguish it because in that case, they clearly had the parties purposely availing themselves in Kansas, and it was also interpreting a Kansas statute, which is completely different from anything we have in this case. It was a Kansas Supreme Court case that's not binding on this state, and the main difference is that they purposely availed themselves by selling their tire manufacturing chemicals to companies in Kansas, and in fact, a lot of those companies clearly did business in Kansas, so that's why that case is easily distinguishable.
Also, it's I understand part of that argument, but we were in a period of time that was a little different from others at the gas trading in this area. The California, Southern Nevada had an indirect relationship. No bearing?
Your Honor, what I can't understand is the jump that they're trying to make, that Ms. Zanaboni conspired with somebody when she had no contacts with Nevada. They haven't alleged that Enron, who she was trading with, had any contacts in Nevada. Enron's not a party here, and her employer's not a party here. So how can there be a conspiracy theory hung over Ms. Zanaboni when she has no contacts here, and her employer, who may or may not have contacts in Nevada, they're not a party to the suit?
Is Reliant Energy Services, Inc. a subsidiary of Reliant Energy, wholly owned subsidiary, or Reliant Resources?
Yes, they are a subsidiary of Reliant Energy.
Thank you.
My time is up,
yes.
I just have a minute to close here.
Ahead,
I would just say, in closing, there's no reasonable justification in this case to exercise specific personal jurisdiction over Ms. Zanaboni. She doesn't have any contacts with Nevada. It's undisputed that she has no contacts with the state of Nevada. She did not purposely avail herself of this forum, and due process requires that the court affirm Ms. Zanaboni's dismissal from this action. Thank you for your time.
Can I clarify, Your Honor, that the Reliant Energy Inc. here is no longer the parent company of RES, and Reliant Resources Inc. was gone by the time the suit was filed. But there is a Reliant Energy Inc. that's a Texas corporation that does own RES, but it doesn't buy or sell gas. It's just a holding company, as all of these were holding companies.
Rebuttal.
Thank
Counsel,
you.
Before you get into it, could you address the comments that were made as to the Gray Harbor's case and rate and...
Watch what the court did. The interchangeability rule is out there as long as you're dealing with similar statutes. But there's nothing on the electricity side that deprived the FERC of its rate regulatory authority, as happened in the natural gas case. So the interchangeability rule is based on the similarity of the statutes, but where the similarity ends and the symmetry is broken, it can't apply. And in fact, if you read the Gallo case, I agree with Mr. Copeland, you read the first half of it, it looks like, the defendant's going to win, and it's like the opinion was already written, and then suddenly they said, oh my God, this first sale thing, we just, you know, it doesn't work. And that was a that was an interlocutory appeal from a motion to dismiss. And it was sent back down because you got to have fact finding, and that's what ought to happen here based on Gallup. Now, there is a similarity. By the way, they never cite the Otter Tail case, which is a case that we cite on antitrust that says that the voluntary acts of regulated utilities are not immune from antitrust scrutiny. So if it's and that's when the case when the two acts really did, you know, follow each other. Now on AA Primo, Mr. Tomlinson's argument that the decision was made on the basis of a case called Products, which was 2006. So read the opinion. That doesn't work. Now and then as far as Reliant is depending on this settlement, all I can say is it was a settlement. Nevada was not a party to it. You look at footnote 6, nobody else could intervene in it and contest it. It's like paying the district attorney to stop an investigation and write a report. It's not precedent by its own terms in the FERC, so it can't be precedent here. Now, on this point about a jurisdictional seller, in our response to Judge Pro's decision, we cited the leading case, Arkansas, Louisiana versus Hall, which is the leading case on the filed rate doctrine, the interplay of civil litigation, and the entire history of that case, the entire handling of it is impossible if what they say is true about exclusive jurisdiction, and that's the hole in the whole argument. It is the FERC has never had exclusive jurisdiction relative to antitrust claims, and so the whole thing is just the emperor has no clothes. That's all I can say about it. The idea of the Leggett case, Leggett is wrong because it didn't pay attention to the fact that the rate regulatory power of the FERC was removed statutorily. So I think if the court and it gave too much attention to old cases when there really was all kinds of regulation of the wholesale sales, and not enough attention to deregulation. If you just look at the statutes, as I said on my first part, you will not find any rate regulatory power, and that is what the defendants or the respondents are saying that is invaded by the antitrust laws. We cited cases, the state of Illinois case, we win under that. A federal case where a natural gas pipeline company, the jurisdictional seller in the Tight Sands cases, had to defend an antitrust case, and it went all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court and all the way down, and nobody said a word about exclusive jurisdiction of the FERC. Now, how is that even possible? On the Nevada UTPA, the point about authorized, regulated, that depends entirely on this Reliant settlement. And the settlement itself says they didn't have any regulations. Well, that means it wasn't authorized, it wasn't regulated, and there wasn't anything to have this preclusive effect on the antitrust case. The truth of the matter is the FERC has never had antitrust jurisdiction. It has never, the pipelines and the natural gas companies have never been immune from antitrust scrutiny, and that's the rule that this court ought to follow.
Let me ask you about the Mrs. Zanaboni. If her employer is not named as a party here, what impact does that have? Secondly, if she dealt with the Pacific Gas and Electric and Southern California Gas Company, those are California utilities, not Nevada. You
know. That's just a red herring, Your Honor. Right. The Southwest Gas's junction is about 10 meters, is just a little ways above the Southern California Gas and Pacific Gas and Electric. It's at Topoc. That's just where the junction goes off. And the gas sales we're talking about took place in Nevada pursuant to Topoc prices. She intended to influence Topoc, and Topoc covers the market. Now, I would if I may...
Go ahead and finish.
Reliant Energy Services is registered in Nevada. It is one of the many subsidiaries registered in Nevada. We have argued agency that Reliant Energy Services was the marketing agent for the generation company that they developed in Nevada to sell, buy gas, do electricity sales, and that the parent company is is bound on an agency theory. And so the contacts of the parent to Nevada are attributed to Ms. Zanaboni under the conspiracy theory of jurisdiction.
Thank you, Mr. Kelly.
If there are no more questions, I'll sit down.
Mr. Sherry, just before he sits down, just that last point, you mentioned parent company, but the parent company, we have Ms. Zanaboni and the jurisdictional issue as to Ms. Zanaboni.
I'm sorry, I'm having trouble understanding you, Your Honor.
Just if you'd go into just a little further detail about that last issue as to Ms. Zanaboni and the parent company.
Right. The parent company itself, the original parent company, I mean, you heard a bit of the confusion around Reliant. First there was one Reliant, then there was another Reliant. It started as a utility in Houston, Texas, Houston Lighting and Power, and gradually decomposed itself into various things. But while it was doing it, it registered all these, it created all these new companies and registered most of them in Nevada. And that company was busy developing a new business, this unregulated business, and it was making Nevada its headquarters for the Southwest, or certainly for purposes of the registration of its subsidiaries. And Reliant Energy Services was going to do trading. Another company called Reliant Generation was going to build and did build and operate a power plant in Boulder City. And the original parent company, we went down and got the building permit, and it said Houston Lighting and Power was the one applying for the building permit in Nevada. So there's an unappealed finding from the district court that denying our motion, our argument that there was general jurisdiction over the entire parent company. That's binding on this court in this situation. And Reliant Energy Services and Ms. Zanaboni were merely agents of the parent company.
Well, who is the parent company of Reliant Energy Services, Inc.? Because we have Reliant Energy, Inc., a Texas corporation. Is there a Reliant Energy, Inc., a Delaware corporation or something that's a public company?
I didn't review it all, Your Honor, but back for this. But originally there was Houston Lighting and Power. It renamed itself Reliant Energy, Inc., and then it created an unregulated subsidiary called Reliant, RRI, Reliant Resources, Inc., And so you had two. When old Reliant ended up changing its name to CenterPoint and further corporate machinations, and Reliant Resources, Inc. renamed itself Reliant Energy, Inc. So that's sort of what happened. And then eventually, during this case, they've changed some more, and now they're styling themselves RRI, Inc.
Okay, well, I'm confused. I mean, we'll figure it out.
They created
one of the Reliance is Reliance Stadium.
Yeah, what was
Houston, I know.
That's correct.
I don't know which one, but one.
Yeah, Reliant Resources. Well, that's not even related to them anymore. But
okay.
Reliant Resources Inc. was the unregulated subsidiary, and once the two companies were actually separated, it became New Reliant Energy Inc. So. It is confusing, and I say remand it just so we can sort those facts out.
Thank you, Mr. Kelly. Thank you, Mr. Tomlinson, Mr. Copeland. Informative, interesting, challenging. This case will stand submitted.